From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As jury selection in the trial of Derek Chauvin has finally finished, the verdict on policing of last year's Black Lives Matter protest appears to be in already. Police departments in city after city where mass protests against racist police brutality, as symbolized by Chauvin's killing of George Floyd, were found to have aggressively overreacted. Reports of police responses in New York City, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Dallas, Chicago, and more proved the protesters' point that police in America are out of control, often escalate violence instead of the opposite, and need to be held accountable. Interestingly, a new report this week found that in those cities where Black Lives Matter protests were strong over the past 5 years, police also ended up killing 20% fewer people. My guest is Alex Vitale, professor of sociology and coordinator of the Policing and Social Justice Project at Brooklyn College. His writings about policing have appeared in the New York Times, New York Daily News, USA Today, The Nation, and Vice News. He's the author of the acclaimed book, The End of Policing. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, let's start by talking about how the protests themselves last year were cast with respect to or versus police responses. If you especially watched or read the right-wing media, they were thugs and violent people among protesters, and police were simply trying their best to keep the peace. Independent media were a little bit more critical and pointed out that there were many instances of police literally proving the point of the protesters. So what are we seeing now in reports that have come out of departments that have essentially either assessed themselves or been assessed by watchdogs? There seems to be a pretty clear pattern that overall police departments basically proved the protesters' points in reacting far too violently.
Yeah, well, I think first it's important to point out that it's essential for the right-wing media to make the story about thugs and hoodlums, because that is their way of avoiding dealing with any of the substantive questions raised by the movement. It allows them to dismiss demands to dial back policing, to shift resources as illegitimate and unworthy of real consideration. And so they will always fixate on any kind of disruptive behavior by demonstrators as a way of saying, well, therefore, what they do is not legitimate. Ironically, of course, when those same movements engage in the kind of behavior that we saw at the Capitol in January, somehow that is defended as an expression of personal liberty, you know. So there's an obvious double standard there at work. And I think what's happening now is a little bit of a public reckoning with the tactics that the police used. We've had reports now issued in New York, in Los Angeles, in Dallas, and some other places that have made very clear that the behavior of the police during the demonstrations was completely inappropriate. It involved widespread acts of brutality, the denial of basic First Amendment rights, and really shows the lunacy of putting the police in charge of deciding how to manage protests around abusive policing.
The New York Times, in looking at these reports as a whole, did some good analysis, and they pointed out how the mistakes, they call them mistakes, transcended geography, staffing levels, and financial resources, from mid-sized departments like the one in Indianapolis to big city forces like New York City's, from top commanders to officers on the beat. Police officers nationwide were unprepared to calm the summer's unrest, and their approaches consistently did the opposite. In many ways, the problems highlighted in reports are fundamental to modern American policing, a demonstration of the aggressive tactics that had infuriated many of the protesters to begin with. That's how the New York Times assessed these issues. But really, should we be looking at what the police departments did as mistakes or them being unprepared?
No, not at all. I mean, I appreciate that the New York Times is at least taking this issue somewhat seriously and pulled together the fact that these conversations were happening in a lot of places. But my friend Alec Karakatsanis, who's head of Justice Corps, pointed out that this is a gross misreading of what's in these reports, that these are not missteps and mishandling, that these were consistent efforts to suppress political movements designed to point out abusive policing. And that to claim that this was about a lack of training or preparation seems ludicrous to me, that we've just gone through several years of the Occupy movement, several years of the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement beginning around 6 years ago. And then to claim that somehow this summer, these cities had never seen a protest before and had no idea what to do, just doesn't hold up to basic scrutiny. And the consistency with which police around the country unleashed very high levels of violence, tear gas, rubber bullets, bean bags, baton charges, all across the country to all types of demonstrations, you know, enacting really serious violence on protest activity, suggests that this is not one or two missteps, that this was a widespread enacting of policing as we understand it, which is that we've turned a political problem over to violence workers. And when the political problem has to do with the fact that they have too much power, then they unleash that violence on their enemies.
As far as you know, has there been any accountability for the aggressive tactics? We know that protesters and even journalists got harassed, got arrested. The charges were just dropped against the one journalist who was still facing these charges, Andrea Sahouri, I believe is her name. And she was in Iowa. And then we've seen in Pittsburgh, there were charges just renewed against about 15 Black Lives Matter protesters. But I haven't heard of any charges against police officers for violating people's rights.
So I think we have to think a little bit about what we mean by accountability here. So there's a tendency to limit our conversation about accountability in terms of the punishment of individual police officers. And along that measure, there are one or two cases of some disciplinary consequences for an officer or even a commander. But if we think about accountability more broadly, about some truth telling about what happened, about some actual steps to prevent this kind of abuse from happening in the future, certainly we don't see any signs of real accountability on those measures, that political leaders across the country are still very happy to basically give police a free hand to deal with legitimate protests. And that means that there's going to continue to be these kinds of abusive practices.
The police themselves engaged in tactics that were so violent that often left protesters no choice, right? I mean, there are instances we have heard of protesters being penned in where there was no chance of escape and having those tear gas sprayed, where people were trapped, where people were arrested en masse, even people who were bystanders and not part and parcel of the actual protests. To you, does that showcase the fact that there was such commonality among these aggressive tactics that violated people's rights across the board? Did that, to you, showcase that overwhelmingly police response to those protests was a show of power? It was police saying to the country and to protesters, you don't mess with us.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, as you said at the beginning, the police made our point for us, which is that the police are out of control, that they are a force of danger in the communities that they police, and that we need to explore alternatives. I would point to the excellent report that Human Rights Watch produced about the NYPD's handling of a protest in the Mott Haven neighborhood of the Bronx, in which the very top levels of the police department were involved in the planning and implementation of a plan to suppress the rights of people to demonstrate, that they encircled protesters with no legal authority to do so. When people resisted that encirclement, they unleashed violence on those crowds. They instigated punitive mass arrests where people were held in custody for long periods of time without any kind of medical support or access to bathrooms, lawyers, et cetera. And this was not an accident or a mishandling or a misstep. This was an intentional policy from the commissioner's office on down to punish people for engaging in a radical critique of the NYPD.
There was also an Amnesty International report last fall, which examined how there were 125 separate incidents of police violence against protesters, medics, journalists, and legal observers in 40 different states and Washington, D.C. And just this damning report that essentially seems like was confirmed by the individual department reports that have been coming out over the last few weeks and months. And I'm wondering, Alex, if you have seen over this past year, in the last year of the Trump administration, culminating with the January 6th Capitol riot, the response, of course, to the Black Lives Matter protesters, have police proven that they're basically part of the spectrum, part of the right end of the political spectrum that is occupied by white supremacists in this country?
Well, so on the one hand, I think it's a mistake to say, well, the problems of policing can be reduced to the fact that there are, you know, right-wing extremists in policing, because policing is a diverse profession. There's a lot of different politics at work here. At the same time, policing has always been a repository of a great deal of sympathy and coordination with extreme right-wing movements in American history, whether it's the Ku Klux Klan, whether it's anti-communist movements of the 50s. There were some estimates that as many as a quarter of all members of the John Birch Society were police officers. So we've always had this close connection between policing and the most extreme right-wing movements. And I think this is embedded in the nature of that institution, that when we say that we're going to use violence workers to make society safe, we're basically enabling a whole set of right-wing ideologies that say that the problems of American society are rooted in individual and group moral failure that will only respond to punitive and violent and coercive interventions. And all of this undermines an analysis that says, oh, well, maybe we should understand market failures, government policy as playing a central role in producing mass homelessness, mass involvement in black market activity, failed schools, and all the rest that then get turned over to the police to manage. So in essence, whenever we empower policing as a tool for social modification, we are empowering a whole set of right-wing ideologies.
Right. There were dozens of current and former police officers that were arrested or have been arrested or are facing charges in the January 6th riots. A lot of police departments having realized that that even, you know, members of their department on the payroll had traveled to the Capitol on January 6th. And then most recently, I'd mentioned Pittsburgh, these protesters that are facing charges being filed against them. This was also a city where a recent Facebook group showed just this private, you know, discussions between police officers showing just horrific, hateful, racist, hostile attitude towards protesters. It definitely seems to be this us versus them mentality. And when in fact, of course, they're supposed to be, you know, supposedly protecting and serving us. So just going back to this idea that police have occupied or in many ways are consistent with the ideology of white supremacy, of maintaining white dominated power historically and even currently. Do you think things can change under a Democratic leadership here in the United, you know, under President Biden? Biden has been fairly pro-police for most of his career, but these problems, the ones evidenced by the reports from the Black Lives Matter protest, they do present a problem. He needs to do something about it. His Justice Department and Attorney General Merrick Garland, you imagine, would need to do something about this, right?
Well, I think everything that's been talked about is a step in exactly the wrong direction. I mean, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Bill that passed the House with overwhelming Democratic support is going to just give police more resources.
Right. I understand the Movement for Black Lives came out in opposition to that bill.
That's right. They are diametrically opposed to that. They support the BREATHE Act, written by Ayanna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib, that calls for shifting funds that currently go to law enforcement in the federal budget to grants to communities to implement community-based public safety initiatives that aren't rooted in the criminal legal system. And that's exactly what's needed. And there's no indication that the Biden administration is going to do anything along those lines. They want to put hundreds of millions of dollars into local policing, ramp up federal local task forces in the same way that the Trump administration did, and then hide behind things like implicit bias training and body cameras that the research shows make absolutely no difference and are just designed to re-legitimate this reliance on policing. And so the Movement for Black Lives has made clear that they don't support the Biden administration's take on this, and that their focus is now primarily on supporting local organizing to shift budget priorities through lobbying city council members and going to public hearings and things like that. And I think that's where we're beginning to see real victories happening. And I think that's where the future of the movement really lies for now.
And in fact, very recently, there was a study that examined instances of, or rather, rates of killings at the hands of police officers, and found a correlation with those cities where Black Lives Matter protests had been active for the past 5 years, and found that there was a 15 to 20% decrease in police homicides in those cities over 5 years. That's pretty remarkable, because overall, nationwide, police violence, and in particular police killings, have remained fairly consistent no matter how much money is thrown at reforming them, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting result. We don't know exactly what to make of it. What were the mechanisms, like what's the connection between the protests and the reductions? But the indication of the reduction seems pretty substantial. But now we have to figure out, is it because certain kinds of reforms were implemented? Was it because there was a general political change of mind about over-reliance on policing? Was it because alternative interventions were put in place? The study wasn't able to completely tease that out, and in fact found that one of the factors seems to have been actually that there was a reduction in violent crime in those communities. Hmm. Which may be a result of, you know, involvement in movement activism or a sense of a new possibility. We really don't know the answer to that, but it is certainly a strong endorsement that communities that organize, that engage in concerted protest activity, are getting some relief.
There is also some evidence, Nieman reports pointed out in February, that media coverage of police violence has changed largely as a result of Black Lives Matter activism, trying to change the narrative. And, you know, as we pointed out, the New York Times is at least paying attention to police violence, even if they're casting aggression as mistakes. It seems as though, you know, what I feel like we need to take from this is that protests matter and make a difference. And change, of course, takes a long time to enact. But we do have to acknowledge that in the long term, it works to bring about attention to the problem, to protest it, to demand change. Even if the media coverage is changing, that's hopefully going to result in a shift in our cultural approach to policing and how we view police, right?
I think the challenge right now is to take all that energy that produced these amazing protests over the last year and turn that into sustained political engagement, building political power. So the protests are incredibly important in reshaping the conversation, in creating political space, and we need to keep those protests going. And I think we're going to see a lot of that protest activity in the as the year continues, but we also need to build organizations and organizational power. And the Movement for Black Lives and other groups around the country, I think, are moving in exactly that direction to support the kinds of grassroots organizing that allows us to have these tough conversations with our friends, our neighbors, our family members about the ways we can produce public safety without having to rely on the police and the power that's going to be needed to force our local governments to reflect that in their budget priorities.
Finally, let's talk about the trial of Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis, which is, you know, hugely symbolic. It was George Floyd's killing at his hands that spurred the latest chapter of protest, not just in Minneapolis, but all over the country and even different parts of the world. We are now at the point where all the jurors have been seated in this high-profile trial. Do you worry, though, that all the focus on this trial and its outcome may obscure the original demand of defund the police, which sadly has sort of become misconstrued and even kind of swept under the rug?
Absolutely, yes. Because what this mega coverage of the case will do is it will say the way we resolve our problems is through the criminal legal system. But first, I don't think we're going to be happy with the results of this trial. And second, even if the results do prove, provide a conviction, let's say, is that going to change policing in Minneapolis or around the country? The evidence suggests that it's not. You know, when the police officer was convicted in Chicago a couple of years ago, there was a lot of celebration, but no one in Chicago is talking about how amazing the Chicago police are as a result of that. It did not feed back into the institution in any meaningful way. So we need to keep the focus on this question of budget priorities, reducing the power of policing, instead of thinking that if we can just jail a few killer cops or get rid of qualified immunity and sue some killer cops, that this is going to fix American policing. This is a political problem, and it's going to require a deeper political solution.
Well, Alex, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time, and good luck to you.
You're most welcome.
I've been speaking with Alex Vitale, professor of sociology and coordinator of the Policing and Social Justice Project at Brooklyn College. He's also the author of The End of Policing. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.